Welcome, Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced, which we have not been in a long time, Cody, in the Allstate Showcase studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue the day after St. Patrick's Day. So many people walking around in stained green clothing with heads that are just bursting at the seams from overindulgence yesterday. But we are back and happy to be here. Big show planned, always more fun, of course, when you get involved. 312-981-7200, that's the number. When you call in, you will be talking to Cody. I can't believe we're actually back either. Goff, he's the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. If you're nice to him, you get to me. Social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. Look how easily we fall right back into the routine, Cody. Everything is smooth. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to one of the organizers of Keep Music Alive, a program that we've talked about in the past. This week, coming up, very exciting, is Teach Music Week, so we'll find out all about that. Then after 3:30, David Baker joins me. He is the CEO of the Barrel Run, a young man who created a very, very cool experience that runs around Chicago in the most unique vehicle I guarantee you will ever see. That's right, I guarantee it. Money-back guarantee, the most unique vehicle you will ever see running around town. So we'll do that. And then, Cody, this is bad news for us. Sarcasm is dying. I'll explain that after 4 o'clock. 4:30, a name you might recognize, Steve Bertrand, is going to jump on with us for a few minutes because he and I are leading a reverse British invasion. We are taking America to Britain. And we'll tell you all about that. Then our good friend and very talented singer-songwriter Michael McDermott will join us after 5 o'clock because he has a brand new album coming out and some big shows coming up. So we'll hear some music from him. Always great stories when Michael joins us. So looking forward to that. It has been, how many weeks has it been since we've been here, Cody? It's been quite, like four? Probably four, yeah. Three, four. It's been a while. But here's the deal, Lucille. Starting now, we are back every week. What time will we be on? Well, that's anybody's guess. Normally, it's going to be 5 to 7 after White Sox baseball. So we'll get all the scheduling stuff out of the way now. We'll be back 5 to 7, usually maybe a little earlier after White Sox baseball. Today, we're here till 6, so very exciting. And, of course, we will keep you posted on all that. Have you been keeping busy? I know you've been critiquing my videos, but other than that, have you been doing anything show-related while you've been gone?
Mostly just critiquing your videos, thinking about the show all the time.
Is that right?
Missing you.
Thought about the show all the time and missed me? Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I wish I could believe half of that.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know which half not to believe. I'm going to choose not to believe any of it.
All right.
But,
Hey, you got texts the one time. I sent you text.
You did text me after the first video, and then I actually listened to you and I didn't hear anything back. So I'm going to take that as the same way I deal with people here. If I don't hear from you, I'll take it as a good sign. Whereas, you can either, when you don't get feedback, you can either think to yourself, well, I'm doing everything right, or you can think, well, they've stopped giving a good gosh darn about us.
Wow.
And that's kind of, so I don't know. I don't know which way to go.
It's one way to say it.
Well, sure. I tried to, I had to triple clutch to not say it one of the previous ways that I wanted to say it.
Yeah, you got to remember, we're a clean show.
Are we?
Yeah, I know you've been off for a while. Like, that's not even true. Every time I go on Facebook, it's like, oh, look at me. I'm filling in for this show.
I don't say, hey, look at me. I'm filling in. I just, you know, people wonder. I tell them. That's how it goes. That's social media, isn't it?
That's definitely. Dude, hey, I'm worse than you, probably.
We're all, you know, we got to keep, we have multi-platforms. I don't know if you heard about that.
So many multi.
Multiple platforms? Platforms. Hmm. Multiple platforms.
I only use Facebook as a marketing tool. Like, I only just share stuff that I do.
Yeah.
I don't even, like, I don't care what other people are doing. I don't tell people what I'm doing. I'm just like, here's a new thing I'm in. Look at it or don't.
Look at it. Make sure you enjoy it. Or don't. I don't care. But, so we're back. This is going to be, it's going to be a good show. We're going to, normally I don't care about breaks. You know, I'll talk till I'm winded. But today we're going to take this break because in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to introduce you to Joanne Perdomonico. And she's the executive director of Keep Music Alive. And if you have been thinking to yourself, you know what, I would like to take a music lesson. I would like to learn an instrument. Or I think my children should learn an instrument. Well, this is the week for you. We'll find all about Teach Music Week on the other side. It's Brian Noonan. Yes, it's really me on 720 WGN. Maybe you've always wanted to learn to play music, or your kids are taking music lessons. Music is a wonderful thing. Music education, very, very important. Joanne Pierdomenico is executive director of Keep Music Alive, and Vincent James is, we've talked to Vincent before. Good to have you both on the program. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Brian. having us. We're excited to be here.
I am excited, too. For those who are not familiar, who wants to explain what Keep Music Alive is?
Oh, Keep Music Alive is a nonprofit with a mission to promote the value of music, the educational value for our children, therapeutic value for kids and adults, and overall just making us, a happier people. And two vehicles that we created to help do that, one which is starting this week, is Teach Music Week, and the other one is Kids Music Day that happens in October.
And I think that's what we talked to you about last time, Vincent, was Kids Music Day. But Joanne, Vincent mentioned some of the benefits, and I'm a big proponent of music education in school and learning music later in life. I'm taking music lessons right now. A friend of mine who's also my age has started taking piano lessons. It's very important. But what are some of the benefits of music education?
So a lot of the brightest people in the world have had a type of music education, whether it was through a school or a private instructor. It really is one of the only activities that works both sides of the brain at the same time. So, and it also helps with learning other core subjects, such as the math, the science, and really it's beneficial for as we grow because it helps our brains to be able to retain information longer.
And what would be, so education-wise, those, that all makes sense. What about the therapeutic benefits?
There's so many ways now that music is being used. The simplest way would be really to motivate people to go further with their therapy, but also for the emotional and, the psychological benefits of having the music to help them, get through what they're going through, what they're trying to process. There's so many different things, really, and, it's been proven how music helps with music therapy.
So now this is a Teach Music Week starts tomorrow, runs through next Sunday. Vincent, what happens during Teach Music Week? Give us the week in a nutshell.
So what we've done is we've partnered with now just over 600 locations in the U.S., Canada, and 8 or 9 other countries to offer a free lesson to new students, whether it's kids or adults, whatever demographic they normally serve, as a way to try to kickstart, get people, kids and adults that maybe were thinking about learning to play that guitar, the ukulele, the piano, or whatever, and they just need, a little maybe push to get started. And so basically you can contact any of the schools that are out on the website, teachmusicweek.org, and either visit them in person or call or email and try to set up an appointment to get a free lesson to get yourself started. And you might find, maybe the guitar isn't really a good fit for me, but, I'm really enjoying the piano. What are you taking now, Brian?
I'm taking Bauron, the Celtic drum.
That is
wow.
Awesome. That is awesome. And how does it make you feel when you're doing that?
I enjoy it quite a bit. It's a time where I can focus on myself. I don't, it's productive. It's not, I don't feel like I'm wasting time or taking time away from something more important because it's an important part of my day.
And it's an accomplishment as well.
Yes. I mean, thinking about my first lesson to now, I mean, I'm by no means an expert, but I can play along with some tunes.
Yeah,
and that makes you feel good, right?
It does. It makes me feel happy. Makes me feel proud. There's a lot that goes into it. And as I mentioned, I was talking to a friend of mine who just started piano lessons, and it's the same thing. He's a guy in his 50s. He started playing piano, and he loves it. He likes to sit down, and he's played other instruments in the past, or does play other instruments, but he's learning a new one, and it makes him feel great.
And there's a lot of social aspects to it, too. I mean, when you're learning from someone, you're having that interaction with another person. If you go out and play music with friends or out to an open mic or wherever you go, a community jam, that social aspect, the community aspect of performing music together is a connection we can make that you're not going to get from almost anything else.
And I think, me sharing my story, but you guys can attest to that. One of the big hurdles for people, they may think, I have always wanted to learn an instrument, but now I'm in my 30s or 40s or older. It's probably too late for me.
Never, never, never. My one guitar student, Brian, didn't start learning to play the guitar or any instrument until he was 80 years old. 3 years later, he's still taking lessons from me and having a ball.
That's 80 years old to start doing anything, I think, is great. If I make it to 80 and I get out of bed, I'm going to be very happy. It's going to be exciting. So, Joanne, how did you guys at Keep Music Alive convince these music teachers and music schools to get on board with this?
Well, they all know personally the benefits of playing music, and part of their own mission is to help spread the joy of learning to play music and all the benefits that come from it. So it really wasn't that hard. You know, you just put it out there, say, hey, this is what we're doing, and we would love to include you. We would love for you to be a part of it, you know, and help, you know, share what you do with your community. And so, you know, they just write back and like, we're on board. What do we need to do?
So that's, again, if you go into, you go to the website, teachmusicamerica.org, and you can click on Teach Music Week. Every state that you can, it shows you what states. Click on. So, for example, in Illinois, I'm looking at the list now. You've got schools in Chicago, Itasca, Rockford, Mokena, Plainfield, Wheaton, Oak Park, Geneva, Highland Park, and Aurora. And all people need to do is, if they see one of those and it's near their home, they can go in and they just say, hey, I'm here and I'd like a free lesson.
Yep.
Yes.
It's as simple, because I'll be honest, that sounds almost too easy.
Well, that's why we do it. Because if it was hard, nobody would do it.
Exactly.
Right? Nobody
right.
wants to do anything hard. We try to make it as simple as we possibly can.
And it's I like what you said before, Vincent, where you might go in and you go, you know what, I've always wanted to play guitar. And then you play it, you take one lesson, or you like the first lesson and you take a few more, you go, yeah, but this guitar is not really for me. So,
right, but that's why we need to try things. Especially, you know, as kids, we naturally go out and we're more open to trying new things. Mm-hmm. But as we get kind of locked into old habits and old behaviors, so it's harder to, like, break out of that comfort zone and try something new. But it's very important to, try the guitar. You don't like it, doesn't work out, too many calluses are giving you a hard time. You know, try the piano, try the ukulele.
Exactly. There's instruments you may not have even thought of.
Exactly.
And you go, and I can't, I think you, as everything else that you talked about, the social aspect is something that I think a lot of people overlook, because they think back, maybe they tried taking music lessons as a child, and, you know, sitting alone and practicing can be kind of mundane and dreary, but if you start practicing with somebody else, you're taking lessons, or you're going out and playing with some other people, it's a whole different world than sitting alone in your room practicing the same few notes or the same few tunes.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And just the joy you get. You know, it's like you're at a concert and you have that shared experience of listening to music live. It's a similar thing to being on stage or being in a room with other people and playing a song together. No matter how simple it is, it could be three chords, and you're playing along and you're singing along, and you have that connection with the other people in the room, and you'd be amazed at how quickly the smiles come to everyone in the room.
It's a type of unity, you know, and, right. and the feelings that it brings to each person brings people together. Music brings people together. It's a universal language, and it brings people together.
It does. I was at a concert the other night, and you see, you know, 20,000 people all focused on one thing and all happy because this song is uniting them. It's a wonderful thing, and to be able to then perform it is an additional gift.
For sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I know we're talking about Teach Music Week, which, again, runs March 19th, that's tomorrow, through the 25th. So you need to go to teachmusicweek.org, and you can find out what school near you is giving out lessons. Go in, take a lesson, try it. You never know what you're going to like. But, Joanne, can you give us a real quick preview? Also, tell us about Kids Music Day.
So Kids Music Day takes place the first Friday in October, and we actually include that weekend as well. And basically, these schools, these, you know, studios and music and movement groups, they all hold a type of activity that celebrates children playing music. They can have an open house, they can have an instrument donation drive, an instrument petting zoo, a community jam. You know, it's really about getting people to notice, you know, children playing music, and then celebrating the fact of children playing music. And there's just so many ways that people can participate. And if they go to kidsmusicday.org, They can see all the locations that participated in 2017, and they may also be, you know, doing the same thing in 2018 plus more.
Fantastic. And if there's somebody listening who has a music school, you can always go to teachmusicweek.org or kidsmusicday.org, and there's links at the bottom of your state's page. If you want to get your school involved, you can do that as well. Joanne Pierre-Domenico and Vincent James, thanks very much. Good luck with Teach Music Week, which, again, is this week, starting tomorrow through the 25th, teachmusicweek.org. I'm sure we will talk again. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much,
Brian. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. That's Joanne and Vincent. It's the fourth annual Teach Music Week put on by Keep Music Alive. So learn to play some music. It is a lot of fun. All right, let's do this. Then it'll be news time. It's WGN. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN. Yes, there's no White Sox game today, but don't worry. The White Sox are going to be on more than you can imagine, which makes me happy. I'm a White Sox fan, but it changes our schedule a little bit, so just stay tuned. We're around, we'll be around after the White Sox game every Sunday. But right now, you know, I love stories about people who create things on their own, create something unique, and do something fun. And for Christmas, my wife gave me tickets to the Barrel Run, which is they do brewery tours and distillery tours and Chicago history tours. And I went on the tour the other, couple weeks ago. My wife and I went on the tour, and we had a wonderful time. And part of the fun was not only going to little breweries and stuff, but learning the story of David Baker, the guy who created this company. And what I mentioned at the beginning of the show was the most unique vehicle I had ever seen, let alone been inside. David Baker is the CEO of the Barrel Run. He's in studio with me now. Welcome. Glad you could be here.
Oh, thank you, Brian. It was great having you on the bus as well.
It was a lot of fun, and we gotta talk about the bus. Because
yes,
we'll talk about the logistics of the tours and things like that, and people can go to thebarrelrun.com, of course. Don't forget the in the barrel. Don't just put Barrel Run, which is why my first couple emails to you went nowhere, because I was just Barrel Run. But it's thebarrelrun.com.
Correct.
All right. So, first of all, you did not start out to be a guy who created a barrel and took people to brewery tours. What's your background?
So, basically, when I was about 14 years old, I showed an interest in cars and motorcycles. And, you know, vintage cars, 20s, 30s, all the way to 70s. And I've just always kind of had this liking for working on things and getting my hands dirty and kind of a self-trained fabricator and technician. And
that phrase is so far. I'm a self-trained fabricator.
Yes.
Wow, how does one train themselves to be a fabricator?
Well, I've worked so hard my whole life.
Yeah.
And I was constantly trying and failing and trying and failing. And then finally, I went to school to be an engineer, a mechanical engineer. And then, you know, that allowed me to apply my principles and my knowledge I had in the past. And you know, kind of make it further my knowledge as well. And after that, I was able to apply being an engineer and also having the hands-on abilities to, you know, be an engineer in the field.
So you're a mechanical and a fluid power engineer. What is a
Correct.
Fluid power engineer?
So it's basically hydraulics and pneumatics.
Okay.
So anything that has motion with hydraulics, like cranes or backhoes or any kind of construction equipment, it's used in every kind of aspect you can possibly imagine, from power plants to the railroads, everywhere. And so I basically was an engineer where I would design systems that would basically move equipment using fluids.
So which idea came first, creating the bus or the company idea for, hey, I want to give some tours?
It was kind of simultaneous. I wanted to develop a company because I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. I've always built cars on my own, 20s and 30s cars. I've always had, you know, a passion for that. And so kind of simultaneously, I said, I want to start a business. I want something that's going to be modern in today's technology, but I want to apply some of the old technology that I have of the 1920s and 30s types of equipment. And so that's where I developed the concept for the bus.
Okay, you need to go. We're going to talk about the bus now. And if you're listening and you're like, well, go, if you want a visual aid, go to thebarrelrun.com, because now we're going to get into this. So at first glance, you see this coming down the street, and it looks like a whiskey barrel. It's perfectly rounded. You don't see any doors coming out. You see this whiskey barrel coming at you on four wheels. What was the process, one, to design it, and then to put this thing together so you could drive it on the city streets.
It was quite complex. From the beginning, I had some friends that were like, why don't you just wrap a bus, you know, do a vinyl wrap on a normal vehicle? And I was like, well, I always overdo everything, so that's not going to work.
And every, you know, that's something that's, like you said, it's not unique. Everybody does that.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically I said, okay, where am I going to start? I purchased a school bus and I just kind of conceptualized it from there. It was just, how am I going to make this a different shape? Initially, I was trying to think of ways I can just use some of the body, but then it was just impossible. So I just had to take it all the way down to the chassis and start over.
Wow. Now, so you had the chassis and you decide, all right, I'm going to make this look like a barrel.
Correct.
What was the hardest part? Figuring out, will this even run? Is it going to be aerodynamically okay? How do I get the rounded edges? Where do you start? What was the biggest hurdle?
Honestly, Brian, the hardest thing was the fact that it's circular.
Yeah.
Everything about a circle is so much more complex than a square or rectangle.
Right.
You have concentricity. You have the angular misalignments. Everything about a circle is so hard. So when you're aligning all the body components, everything is always fighting you. It's so much harder than working with a square structure.
And what about the door? Because that's something I mentioned. You don't see, you know, on a school bus or a CTA bus, you know where the door is. You can see it. But as the barrel is coming down the street, you don't see a door.
Correct. Yeah, and that the purpose behind the bus is I wanted to kind of bring about some of the 1920s Prohibition era, because again, that's my passion and I like that era. It'd be cool if I had a door that was like a speakeasy. Nobody knows where it is.
Right.
And then it's this elaborate entrance where when you open it, everyone's like, oh my God, I want to be inside that.
Yeah, because it opens top and bottom almost like a DeLorean, like a, yes, a Gulfwing kind of door.
Yes.
And so it opens, like the jaws of the barrel now are going to consume you. And you go in, and what is it? Is it actual wood? I know you explained it on the tour, but is it real wood?
Yes, real wood inside and out.
And how, what other kind of touches, what did you have to use to, is it what do you use as the metal to hold this wood together? What is
that? Yeah, so the structure is just standard steel like a normal bus.
Okay.
And then I cladded it on the outside and inside with wood, and that gives you the feeling of being a real barrel. I mean, a lot of people ask me, wow, how is it that this thing is just wood? And I'm like, well, that's the illusion.
It's, yes.
It looks like it's real wood.
Right.
I mean, it has the structural integrity of a real vehicle.
Well, that's good to know now after I've been in it. The other nice thing is, because anybody who's over 4'7" knows that if you get on a school bus, you are horribly uncomfortable. But the way you design the bus, and maybe you're tall as well, so I don't know if that has something to do with it, or maybe it was the circular shape. The rows of seats face toward the center.
Correct.
So you've got room for 22 people. Is that correct?
Yes.
On the bus? 22 people, so you have two sides, and everything goes to the middle. Was that a design, was that necessary because of the circular pattern, or just because you wanted people to be comfortable, or a combination of both?
Combination of both. It was just kind of happenstance. I decided I wanted to go that route because it was going to be local tours.
Mm-hmm.
I have visions for the future of other vehicles, and they're going to be, you know, forward-facing, so it might be a little bit different. But initially, this was kind of the route I wanted to go.
And the bus has, you've mentioned a couple times your passion for the 20s and 30s. The bus has some historical accoutrements to it. What kind of things were on there that put it really in that time period?
Yeah, so I used lights on the front and back, headlights and taillights off of a 1915 Ford Model T. The taillights in the past, they used to have kerosene in one of the compartments,
right,
and they'd have a wick in the middle, and they'd actually burn the kerosene in order to light the taillights.
Okay.
And so obviously I converted mine over to LEDs.
Right.
But, yeah, there's those, and the headlights, they used to run off of acetylene, so they're actually brass fixtures from a 1915 Ford.
Nice, and the horn is an old horn too, right?
Yes, it's actually a reproduction, but it's it's an Uga horn front that would be on the same Model T as well.
It's very exciting to get on there. I got to ask you this though: you come to the city with permits, and you go, "Listen, here's the deal: I'm going to drive in a barrel down the street." Did they laugh at you and send you on your way? Did they call the authorities to have you committed? What did you have to, how many hoops, no pun intended, with the barrel? How many hoops did you have to jump through to convince the city that, listen, this is, it's safe. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, get on board. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, my background is in engineering, mechanical engineering. I've dealt with mobile and large equipment in the past. And so I just made sure that I just followed the guidelines and the regulations. And then because of that, yeah, when I pulled up, they had this look on their face like, what is this thing? But after they looked into it, they were like, well, it passes everything that we wanted it to. So on you go.
Very nice. Well, I was kind of disappointed that you didn't drive it down here. I picture you driving it as your everyday car.
I want to, but it just generates too much attention.
I was going to say, and it's got to, you know, use a little bit of gas because it is a giant, giant machine.
Yes.
David Baker is my guest. He is the CEO and the Chief Innovation Officer also of the Barrel Run. They do brewery, distillery, and history tours. We've talked about the bus, which is unbelievable. Go look at the pictures on the Barrel Run. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into some of the different tours that you guys do. And answer any questions. If you do have a question, 312-981-7200. More with David Baker. On the other side, it's WGN. David Baker is here. He's in the studio. He is the CEO and Chief Innovation Officer for the Barrel Run. They do wonderful tours around the city, breweries, distilleries, and history tours in, again, the most unique vehicle. Now, I'm guessing with the brewery and the distillery tours, everybody goes in the barrel. For the gangster tours, they go in the barrel too, right?
Correct. Yes.
Everybody's in the barrel all the time.
All the time.
What are you going to do? Leave it in a garage? You got it.
Yes.
But take it out and run around with it. All right. Well, let's talk about the tours. We'll start with the breweries because that was the one I went on.
Yeah, definitely. So we visit up to about 20 different locations in the city. On any given tour, you're going to go to three locations for that tour. You're going to get samples at each location, which is going to be like flights, and also get a tour of one of the production facilities.
And you do all different size breweries. So the one we went on was Lake Effect, which is a small brewery. Established, people know them, their product is out there, but it's a relatively small setup. Then we moved down to Old Irving, which is a little bigger, a lot of, you know, big restaurant traffic there. And then we stopped, our last one was Revolution at the main brewery and tasting room, which is, now this is a fact that I got from you guys. They're the largest independent brewer in the city, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So you learn, you not only taste good beer, but you're learning things as you go.
Correct. Yeah, that's kind of the goal when we developed the company was I wanted to make sure that people got to see the range from small to big, get to see the business side of everything as well,
yeah.
Not just the taste, but even some of the small breweries like Lake Effect that we visit, they have some of the best beer in Chicago, and not many people know about them just because it is a small brewery.
Right.
So that's kind of the goal. We want to say, hey, here's the difference in scale, and then here's the difference in taste.
And your tour guides are also giving different bits of history along the way, because the pickup spot is at the Rock and Roll McDonald's, or what formerly was the Rock and Roll McDonald's, but you get there, so it's a little bit, not an unbelievably long ride, but there's a little bit of a ride to your first brewery, so you don't want people just sitting there. They're getting a little history lesson along the way.
Correct, yeah, that was the goal we wanted to have was, let's throw in some fun facts about Chicago and drinking and Prohibition and kind of tie in the Prohibition feel of the bus and also give them some unique facts that they might not be able to get on any other tours. So we do that for the public tours, and we also do the private tours where we might not necessarily go through much information, kind of let them hang out and do their own thing.
So if you're having a bachelor party, bachelorette party, 40th, 50th birthday party, you can rent out the bus. And do you have the tours? Is it the same kind of tours, but now it's just a private group?
Yes, and like for example, we do a lot of corporate events.
Okay,
and we can customize the events for them, and we can offer, you know, here's the range of locations that we visit, and we can add in food or any kind of other stops, okay. And then definitely, it's kind of a custom event for that event.
And I've seen pictures on the site of wedding parties doing this for, you know, before the ceremony, they're running around getting a few beers in them, which is always a good idea.
And that is the most unique backdrop that they can have.
Yes.
They're very excited when they get to have the barrel bus pull up.
Now, when you go into these breweries, is it difficult to convince small businesses to get involved in these things, or are they eager? Because as you said, you might have a really good product, but you're a small brewery, and the word needs to get out. Because I might have never traveled up to Lake Effect from where I live, but I'm glad I went up there.
And that's exactly why they're very welcoming, and they liked working with us because we have a very unique product. We are very classy in nature. We like to make sure that, you know, the tours are about the beer and about the history, and people are actually there to taste the beer. And so we get a lot of feedback from the breweries that, hey, they came back to us, and that's because people learned about these establishments through us.
Yeah, there's stuff that I hadn't had that I would definitely have again. All right, so the brewery tours are, would you say those are the biggest ones you guys do are the brewery tours?
Yes, the brewery tours.
All right, so you also have distillery tours. I'm not familiar. Are there that many local distilleries?
There's about five, and then there's some more that are up and coming as well. So we visit anywhere from Evanston all the way down to Chicago, a bunch of different distilleries that specialize in whiskeys, gins, vodkas, brandies, all over the place. So we kind of give a wide variety of tastings.
Nice. And it's the same kind of setup. You go to three on a tour and have some time in there and do the whole thing.
Exactly. And then it's even very popular for private events. They'll mix and match. So they'll say, we want to do whiskey tasting and then some beer tastings, which is one of my favorite things.
Okay, yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And do you also do the gangster tours?
Yes.
And tell me about those.
So that's basically like more of a historical tour. We take people around 2 hours. They get to experience the gangster side of Chicago, and then we stop at some speakeasies where they might want to have a cocktail, and they, you know, get to see like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and Holy Name Cathedral, and we talk about Al Capone and all the other mobsters that came up anywhere from the early 1900s through the 1940s.
And if people are interested in any of this, they can, of course, go to thebarrelrun.com. And I like when you're booking a tour, you say, all right, on this day at this time's tour, these are the breweries we're going to, and these are the distilleries we're going to. So it's not a surprise. So you might say, well, I've heard of them. I would like to go and see them. It makes it easier to choose which tour you want to go on.
Exactly. And that's for our public tours. And a lot of guests come to us for private tours or even charter services, and you'll go ahead and quote them out for those.
Very nice. Are you ever going to go back to being exclusively an engineer, or is this now you've got the barrel bus and you're going to create like a bus that looks like a martini glass and who knows what else?
Obviously, I'm always an engineer at heart, and I'd love to get back into developing alternative energies or something in the future. I'm a hard worker, and I will be until the day I die.
What about a machine gun shaped bus for the gangster tour? Do you think engineer wise, do you think that's possible?
It's possible engineer wise. I just don't know if the city would approve that one.
That's true. They don't want a big Tommy gun rolling down the street.
Exactly.
The barrel is unique enough. So if you're looking for a really unique, fun time, thebarrelrun.com is the website. David, congratulations.
I was really, really happy
with the experience, and the bus is beyond compare. So congratulations. Best of luck, and we will talk to you again, I'm sure.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, let's do this then after the news. Sarcasm is dying, so Cody may be mute for the rest of his life. Oh, wouldn't that be lovely? Just real quick, if Pam mentioned Tuesday's the primary election, get out and vote, because if you think, oh, whatever, go look at the editorial in the Tribune today. They, I forget what primary they quoted, where 16% of the eligible voters in Illinois voted. 16%. That is, in one word, pathetic. So I don't care who you're voting for. Except for the one guy who's running unopposed, who's a Nazi. Don't vote for him. But everybody else. So I will take a stand, and I know, Cody, I'm out on a limb when I take a stand against Nazis, especially in this age of the Internet.
Let's not polarize our audience unnecessarily.
Well, listen, for the six Nazis who are fans of this program, I'm sorry, I can't back your candidate. So if we lose six Nazis, so be it. But the point is, go vote. So that at least, because if I read Wednesday that only 16% of us voted, I'm personally going to go on and slap some people. You got to vote. Again, you vote for who you want. I'm not here to tell you who to vote for. I'm just here to tell you to vote. And it's supposed to be nice. So there's no excuse.
Well, it's only 40. I can't go outside. I can't possibly go to a polling place when it's under 60 degrees. Really? Then you are lazy.
That's right. I said it. If you don't vote, you're lazy.
You're spitting hot fire.
Man, I've had weeks of hot takes building up inside me like an ulcer.
Yeah.
Like a talk show ulcer that needs to be purged.
Wow.
I'm like a hot take boil that needs to be lanced and let all my hot takes out.
It's not the analogy we needed, but it was the analogy we deserved.
It is exactly the analogy we deserve. Was that sarcasm, Cody? I kind of sensed that it was.
I don't know, Brian. Was it?
Well, I might not be able to tell anymore because sarcasm's days may or may not be numbered.
Really?
Yep. That's what I'm hearing. Or what I'm reading.
Is it?
It is. Here's the deal. used to be able to, when you talk to somebody, like I'm looking at Cody, not, you know, begrudgingly, I'll say, but I'm looking at Cody. So when he says something to me, I can kind of tell by his facial expression and the glare in his eyes when he's being less than forthright, when he's being a tad sarcastic. I can listen to him. The problem nowadays is that we send most of our communiques via written word, whether it's texts or emails or emojis or anything like that. And because of that, the nuance that is sarcasm is dying. And experts are afraid that pretty soon no one will be able to, which explains why this show has problems. No one will be able to understand sarcasm. And I said that without any sarcasm. It comes down to one of the most crippling shortcomings, as I mentioned, that everything is written instead of spoken. We need to speak more. So in a study published by the American Psychological Association, there are paralinguistic clues, which I am always, or cues. I'm always looking for paralinguistic cues. That's I say, Cody, what music are you playing? So I can talk it up to the paralinguistic cue. Never. Gestures, intonation, emphasis, and even expression were essential for conveying sarcasm, as I mentioned. But now that we're doing most of our communications digitally, we are losing that. We don't realize that people are being sarcastic. And the other problem is, sarcasm is a two-way street. So I have to know that I'm being sarcastic. You have to also know, as the receiver of my sarcasm, that I'm being sarcastic. The problem is on the internet and when we're texting, that a lot of people think they're being sarcastic, but they're not. Because they may not be, how do I say this delicately, intelligent enough to pass that sarcasm along.
Was that delicate?
Was it? No.
You don't know.
It could have been indelicate.
Sure.
Would it have been more indelicate had I said that it is overconfidence born of egocentrism?
Wow.
That's what it says in the article.
Then, yeah, that wouldn't have been delicate.
So I was trying to be more delicate.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go hardcore and say that it is egotism born of, or it is overconfidence born of egocentrism. Egocentrism, but it's not. So, which means that people have difficulty, separating themselves from their perspective. So you can't step back and go, is that coming across the right way? You just believe that everything you write is a work of genius. When in fact, it may not be. Hence, your message is convoluted and not as sarcastic or as funny as you believe it to be. So your receiver is not going to take it the way that you may have intended it. Hence, the many apologies that end with, it was just a joke. You know, because everybody, you know, nobody really gets it. Now, this is very important. Here's why. Because if sarcasm dies, our brains slowly die with it. Because there's a part of the brain that has to develop. When you're little, kids like slapstick. It's easy, you know. Kids like watching, my wife still loves it. And I like slapstick too. You know, you watch somebody get hit in the nards with a rake, or somebody fall down a hole, or, you know, there's flatulence humor. That's all hilarious when you're a child. Nothing funnier to kids in grade school than a good fart joke. They love it. But as we get older and our brains develop, we are able to begin to appreciate sarcasm. If we lose the ability to figure that out, we lose the ability for our brains to continue evolving. So we'll all be stuck in Idiocracy, where it's just, you know, I just watched that movie again last week. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Idiocracy. So what's their big show? Their big show is about people getting kneed in the, you know, in the testicles.
Yeah.
So, you know, that will be us.
Is this based on completely conjecture?
No, this is science.
So where's the evidence that it's actually going to go away?
Well, they say it's just the going away is that more people are not able to understand it because it's written words. And you do, how many times have you written something, a tweet or something? I know I have, where I haven't, you know, I'm saying it sarcastically, but unless you had the winky emoji, you know, Which even then, people don't get.
Yeah, I think there is an internet dialect kind of emerging that does imply sarcasm, but it's not universal, and not everybody speaks the same one.
Right.
So that makes it hard.
According to this, a brain that gives sarcasm as well as gets it is a healthy brain. The opposite may be a sign of mental illness.
Wow.
Yeah. Mentally ill. I don't know. I enjoy sarcasm. Now, they're saying that maybe using the emojis is going to help because we can convey a message a little easier with an emoji. Like I said, if I throw a winky emoji in there, if I throw the poop emoji in, you never know. But you'll get my point. Because, again, we're going back to simple hieroglyphics, like the caveman. Do we need to communicate only as cave people with grunts and stick drawings? Is that what's coming?
Do you think that teenagers will just naturally always find sarcasm?
I would hope so. Because that, again, that's the sign of the evolving brain.
Don't you think, but would you have been a happier parent if you hadn't had to deal with teenage sarcasm?
No, because sometimes, well, maybe overall, but no, because then I think when a kid starts, you can tell how funny a kid is going to be once they start embracing sarcasm. And as long as it's not always directed at you, you can find the humor in it. If it's always directed at you, then you just want to strangle them.
Yeah.
But if not, you go, man, that's pretty funny.
That's fair.
You know, when your kid makes a comment that just cracks you up because they got it and they were able to formulate a subtle burn or a sarcastic comment, that takes some wit and it takes some, you know, brain power.
Yeah.
So I'm down with that. So there you go. According to a neuropsychologist at the University of California, she explained in the Smithsonian Magazine that sarcasm is one of life's most essential skills. She said, quote, our culture in particular is permeated with sarcasm. People who don't understand sarcasm are immediately noticed. They're not getting it. They're not socially adept. End quote. Full agreement. Stop. Mic drop. Move on. I threw in all the big hard ends. But that's true. How many times have you said something to someone sarcastically and they don't get it and you're like, wow, you're an adult?
I dated a girl one time and after almost every joke I said, she would say, wait, are you serious?
Are you really?
And there were some outrageous things that I would say.
I think people cover that up too sometimes by saying, really? Which is the same kind of thing. Really? No, how could you think that's true?
Yeah.
And then I do judge them.
Yeah.
Because, but then I judge them, but then I don't know if they're being sarcastic.
Yeah.
It's very tricky.
I don't.
So how long did you date a girl? No, I don't think they are either. I think they just don't get it. I think they're, as this said, socially inept.
Right.
It was like not as intelligent.
I dated for like a year. You knew her. You met her once.
Yeah.
One of the many exes.
Sure, one of the string of ladies you kept floundering in the boats. What about somebody out there that is always sarcastic? Is that a great thing? Or is that a cake eater's thing?
Cake eater?
I don't know what that means.
Well, see, clearly that text was being sarcastic. But we don't know that because it was over a text.
Right. See, that's, yeah, a text, there's no emojis there. How am I going to, you know, is somebody always being sarcastic? Are we the moron that they're talking about? And yet they're listening. Weird.
I got to tell you, over the years, I have received many phone calls, and they'll ask a question, and I have no idea if it's a joke or not, and they'll pull the punchline, and like, because I don't expect it, right? Like,
sure, exactly.
Most listeners aren't calling in with a joke, and I enjoy when they do, but if they do a joke and then a punchline, like, my brain does a little backflip, and I'm like, okay, is this a real call? Oh, wait, was that a joke? Oh, wait, do I get it? And then sometimes it's about a topic where, like, it's a reference to something you said that I didn't hear because
right,
I was on the phone with somebody
else.
So I'll just be like, ugh. So, like, many people probably just think I'm a complete idiot.
Yeah, Cody is socially inept. He doesn't get sarcasm. He doesn't understand what's going on here. One of the texters said, what am I citing? It's a study published by the American Psychological Association that was quoted in an article called Why Sarcasm Days Are Numbered.
So that's ASA. What you're
looking for. Yeah, sure. Of course, it's always in the ASA. They're doing all the psychological stuff.
It's APA.
Huh?
Yeah. Because psychological starts with a P. See, yeah. That was sarcasm.
I wasn't paying attention. I'm reading the text, and I rarely listen to what you say. I'm still trying to figure out what a cake eater is. I don't know what that is.
We can break it and figure it out.
Yeah, we'll take a break and figure it out because it sounds like a slam, and yet what's bad about eating cake? I had a piece of cake yesterday. It was delicious. I find eating cake enjoyable. I find people who don't like cake questionable at best. Cake eater is an insult from the Mighty Ducks movie. Now you see, that still makes no sense to me.
Now I remember.
I don't remember the Mighty Ducks movie other than it was hockey and Emilio Estevez.
Emilio!
All right.
That was a Night at the Roxbury reference.
I never saw that movie.
Great film.
You're gonna say great film for Night at the Roxbury.
When I was in high school, maybe college.
Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell, correct?
Yeah.
All right.
Being silly.
Sure, but for 90 minutes?
Yeah.
All right. Those sketches, like many SNL sketches that try to be movies, were funny as 3-minute sketches. Stretching them to 80 to 90 minutes?
The first time I saw that sketch, I was laughing so hard I was crying.
It was a very funny sketch.
I, like, fell over.
I liked it, but I don't know. I never saw the movie, so I don't know if it could have held up for 90. I'm going to say no.
But
you enjoyed it as a young Cody.
As a young Cody, yeah.
Sure, young Cody enjoyed it. Was there a gratuitous nudity? Is that why you found it fascinating?
No, I enjoyed it more than the weird Molly Shannon, Will Ferrell movie with
the cheerleader? Superstar?
Yeah, no.
That's the one my wife loves.
Oh, really?
She loves that character. And those uniforms are on display at the Saturday Night Live exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We walked past it. My wife saw it. She immediately went, "Superstar." She does all the time. She's a lunatic. Let's see. We got a couple more clarifications. Cake eater is an insult. That's right. As in, let them eat cake. Mean and out of touch. I don't know who that is. Let's see. Cake eater is a term for a person who comes from money and knows that they feel anybody who doesn't have their wealth is below them. They're usually jerks. Let's see. Somebody's saying they enjoy the show and no attempt at sarcasm. So thank you. I appreciate that. We try to enjoy it as well. Hopefully we enjoy it. How horrible would that be?
That'd be rough.
We come in, we do a show we hate. This show blows. I can't believe I'm doing it. Can't believe it. Looking forward to after 5 o'clock, Michael McDermott will be in here. We'll be talking about that. Did you see Black Panther? I still have not seen Black Panther.
Yes.
Since we were on movies, I have to, because I saw the trailer yesterday for Infinity War, Avengers.
Yes.
Infinity War, and I was completely enamored. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it going, oh no, I already have plans for that weekend, so I'm going to have to figure out a time to see Infinity War. But then I was like, I gotta go see Black Panther. And then I have to rent Thor Ragnar, Fraggle Rock, whatever.
Yeah.
The last Thor movie was.
It's good.
To catch up. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know if I need to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2 before. See, this is the thing with the Marvel Universe. Everything is intertwined, so I don't know if I need to see the entire canon of Marvel movies. And I've seen, I'd say, 80% of them.
Yeah, I'm going to say yeah. You could probably skip Spider-Man Homecoming. I actually watched that last night, very drunk, and I didn't care for it.
You didn't like Spider-Man Homecoming?
No, Spider-Man's my favorite superhero, but I just thought, like, the villain was totally generic.
Yeah, I wanted more out of Michael Keaton's Vulture than I got from... I was watching it, too, last night.
That's weird.
But, well, listen, great minds.
And
he said,
apparently.
Fully sarcastically... I like that one because it showed Peter Parker. It showed what a teenager would be like if all of a sudden he was a superhero.
You know, it was fine.
I wanted more of the villain.
It didn't do much. Like, it was very... Like, it felt like it could have been an episode of a TV show.
And the tie-in with, you know, the villain's weapons and how it came to be. And I mean, they're stringing the whole universe together. But sometimes it's like, all right, we don't need to crowbar everything in.
Yeah.
You know, but... I like it. All right, on the other side of the news, we're going to talk to Steve Bertrand because Steve and I are mounting an all-out assault on England. We will explain on the other side. But first this, WGN. If you've listened to this station for any amount of time, of course you are familiar with Steve Bertrand, one of the fine news people here. He also hosts the Noon Business Hour. He's one of the Mincing Rascals. He does all sorts of things here at WGN, but for the last few years, he has also been the head of Steve Bertrand Travel, which has hosted wonderful tours around the world, usually led by either Steve or another WGN personality. And this fall will be no exception because in October, Steve is taking over England. He is taking a group to England, and the trip was so popular that he asked somebody else to host one of these tours, and I am honored to say that is me. Steve Bertrand joins me now. Hello, Steve. How are you?
I would write to you, Brian Noonan. I'm well. How are you?
I am terrific and really looking forward to October because I just realized we're going to overlap. So this is kind of a British invasion in reverse. You and I will be taking over England.
We did this once a few years ago. John Williams had a group going to Ireland, and I had a group in Ireland at the same time, and we all had dinner together. And this time, my group is going to, our last two nights in London will be your first two nights in London, and we're all in the same hotel.
Terrific.
So we'll have about 48 hours kind of, yeah, it's going to be fun. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Now, for those who aren't familiar, how long ago did you start doing these tours?
I started doing them, I think my first one was in 2013, and it was a literary tour to Ireland. I had friends from college who were running a company, and they kind of wanted to get me involved in it, so I just started there. And you know what, Brian, I just love doing it. I love traveling. These trips that we have are, you know, they're always great, very nice hotels, and we just had dinner with a couple last night who we met on one of our trips. You know, people come back. They have a great time and come back with new friends, and I've been very lucky to kind of fall into this.
Well, if you go by reviews, all the reviews are wonderful for all the tours, and that's why you had to add a second tour for England in October, because the first one, when you announced that you were going, sold out immediately, and then you said, well, so many people want to go, let's do another tour, and that's how we ended up with the second tour.
Yeah, we always do, or try to do at least four a year with WGN. And so my England trip, like you said, filled up so fast. I had a waiting list. So I'm like, you know, I know we had talked about you doing a trip this year. And, I'm glad you're going to take the group because I think you're going to have a great time. Your group leaves, go ahead.
Yeah, go. No, I said I'm very excited too. So our group leaves October 11th. And what can we expect when we fly overnight from Chicago to London, and then once we land in England, what can we expect?
Well, it's a 10-day trip, and first day in London, you're going to start off at the Victoria and Albert Museum and just kind of hang out in London for a couple of days, and then from there you'll go on to Windsor, Oxford. There's a Tea on the Thames event, which is pretty cool. You'll go punting in Oxford, you know, the boats that they take up and down the rivers there. Spend some time, and I don't know if you've ever, have you ever been?
I have not been to England. I'm really looking forward to it. I've been practicing calling everyone governor. Is that going to be a skill I'll need?
You know, not while you're there, Brian.
Okay.
Focus on that while you're here.
All right.
But, you know, Westminster is great. You're going to go to Bath, which is a great Georgian city, and there actually are Roman ruins there. Stonehenge.
Yes.
Windsor Castle, Stratford-upon-Avon. I started to say there's this region called the Cotswolds, and they're just fantastic little villages in England, a little bit west of London, and you'll spend a couple of days there. We always try to build, you know, a lot to do, so you get to see a lot of stuff, but we always try to build in a good amount of free time, too, because, you know, you want to go off and explore on your own.
Sure.
There's a whole day free in London. There's some time in the Cotswolds and things like that. But the trip for, you know, includes airfare, four dinners, breakfast every day. It's like $4,400. It's $43.99, and you know, a lot of people go on my trips, go on a lot of these trips with other people, and they say that our prices are very good. I'm not an expert on that. I can just tell you what they tell us. But,
right.
I think you get a pretty good deal. Oh, I didn't tell you the Bombay Sapphire Distillery too. It's a self-guided tour.
Oh, that's good.
So that means you can spend a lot of time in there, I'm afraid.
Yes, maybe I missed the rest of the tour. That would be unfortunate. So as you're building these, what's the focus? I mean, you've done the literary tours, and this one seems to be there seems to be a lot of different things. There's cultural things. There's as you said, the Bombay Sapphire Tour, which is more of a fun. Where do you try to draw or strike a balance for the activities that are included?
Well, you know, I want you to come back having felt like you really saw a good part of the country, and, you know, you didn't miss any sites. That's why Stonehenge is in there. A number of the other spots as well, Stratford-upon-Avon. So you come back feeling good about that. The Tower of London, of course. But I want also, it's important that you have time to go off on your own, have your own experience. So that's key. As far as the theme to it, you know, we started with the literary tours, but since then we just kind of made them a little bit more general. Oh, I did mention, too, Bletchley Park. You know, they did the World War II decoding. You guys are going to stop there for a quick tour as well.
That sounds great. Now, lest people think that I am going to be giving them all the information, which, I, you know, who knows? I may become quite an Anglophile, but there is a true tour guide who knows the country and knows everywhere we're going to be stopping, who is leading the group.
Absolutely. You'll have a guide meet you at the airport, and he or she will stay with you until you leave and come back to the States. And, you know, that, I'm glad you said that, because there are a lot of people saying, well, you know, a bus tour, I'm not sure about a bus tour.
Yeah.
I was kind of that way, honestly, Brian. When I started, I'm like, I don't know if that's for me. But it's amazing how much more you learn about the country when you're spending, you know, a full 10 days with someone who knows the country, knows all the answers, and, you know, talks to you on the bus and is able to answer your questions when you're in the hotel or the lobby or wherever. You know, you don't get the immersion in having to find your way on your own, which some people really enjoy, but it's also true then that you are never lost.
Well, yeah. That's true. And that was my first thought, too, because anywhere I've ever gone, I've done it myself. I've never been with a tour group, so it's going to be a new experience for me as well. And I know people who have done it, and like you said, it's a different way to see the country, but the knowledge you gain is usually a little more in-depth than if you're just going by yourself.
You know what? It's like when you're a young parent and you have a minivan, you're like, I am never going to get a minivan. Why would I want a minivan? And then you get a minivan, you're like, oh, I kind of get it now. That makes perfect sense.
Exactly. So you're saying the tour bus will be filled with Cheerios and sippy cups?
Yeah, and unfortunately not from your group, but from the group before.
Ah, all right. So then, again, if people want to go to England, we'll have this. I'm looking forward to the overlap now. This is going to be a lot of fun. Our trip leaves October 11th, we're there for 10 days. You can go email Steve at steve@stevebertrandtravel.com, or you can call 847-606-6065. Now, I know there's not too many seats left on the tour that I'm leading, correct?
Yeah, we've still got plenty of room. We're not going to probably fill up this weekend, but, yeah, people need to...
Yeah, don't wait.
Check it out. Get the reservations in, because they, you know, every one of these trips I've done with GN has filled up pretty quickly, and I know this one will fill up too.
And go to a Steve Burton.
You know, I just want to stress one thing, Brian. People, and you'll find this, you just have fun.
Yeah.
People on these trips, you just laugh, and you'll come home with new friends. I guarantee it. I mean, I hear it from people who've traveled with me all the time. And, you know, my return rate usually is as high as sometimes 60-65% on these trips.
Wow, that is amazing.
It is. It's great. And, you know, I've got a whole new sort of group of friends now just who've traveled with me 4 and 5 times.
That's very cool. Well, hopefully we'll make some friends this time. I'm sure we will. If you want to see everything that's included and see the itinerary, see everything that we're going to be doing on this trip to England and England's treasures, go to stevebertrandtravel.com. You can see the trips Steve has done before. You can read the reviews. You can see that people are loving these trips. And I have no doubt that these two trips to London will be no exception. We're going to have a good time.
I'm really glad you're going, because I think you're going to be a great host, and I know you're going to love it. So I can't wait to see you in London.
I can't wait to see you there either. It'll be so much different than seeing you on the 7th floor.
I know. Yeah, let me give my number again. So it's 847-606-6065, and I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Perfect. Well, thank you for asking me, Steve. I'm looking forward to it, and we'll get keep getting that word out, and we'll see everybody in London in October. Thanks very much, Steve. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
All right, Brian, you too.
Take care. Again, that number, if you're wondering, 847-606-6065. You can go to stevebertrandtravel.com, get all the information. It is going to be a jam-packed 10 days. We are going to have a good time, I guarantee it, because, listen, what's not to enjoy? You're in another country. As I said, Cody, I'm getting one of those big beef-eater hats, like the guys who guard Buckingham Palace. I'm going to come back with the giant fur hat. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to smuggle either an animal or a very small person under the hat when I come back through customs. So expect an international incident on October 20th.
I do every time you leave your house.
I don't blame you. It is a good bet that something is going to happen. And, yes, last night I left the house. Did something happen? Oh, you bet it did. I'll tell you about that after this, 720 WGN. I wish Cody was going, but, you know, that would be too much to ask if we all went to England together and then just became expats. lived over there. They speak the same language, from what I'm told. I don't know much about it. Roger Badish stopping into the big studio. Haven't seen Roger in a long time. You know, we still technically work here, yes. Cody and I, so it was nice. It's nice to be back. Now we'll be back every... We'll actually see you more now because we're back to following the Sox games. Okay. So we'll be on from 5 to 7.
Right. Yeah. And you said...
You got to get right on them. Oh, you're on that.
You know the Sox more than I do.
I do know the Sox.
So they always, all their Sunday games are during the day.
Yes, yeah. Sunday games, okay. 1:10. I think there's two that are 3:10 or something, but usually it's a 1:10 first pitch.
Okay.
So game should go till maybe 4, post-game 4:30, so we may be on 4:30.
All right.
Ooh, who knows? We'll be here. But we'll be here till 7 either.
I can give you a lot of guidance about the your trip to England.
Have you been to England?
Well, remember, I called you. Remember that?
I don't remember. Oh, you called me from Abbey Road, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I do remember that. And that's in London, correct?
Yes, it is.
Well, I don't know. It's a big country. There's a lot of cities. There's London, there's other ones, there's suburbs, London and the adjacent cities, there's London land, the London land area,
the just London like here. Vicinity.
Sure, the vicinity, London adjacent, I think that's one of them. So yeah, we'll be, so you call me from, well that's good to know because we've got a couple free days, so there's a lot of things I want to do on my free days, and Debbie and I are the kind of people when we're on vacation, I don't believe in sleeping too much, I want to be up and moving to jam as much as I can into a trip as possible.
So the bus ride, we were in a hotel near Piccadilly
Circus
around that area.
I always think Piccalilli when Piccalilli says Piccalilli Circus.
Yeah, no, Piccadilly. So we were near there, and we took a bus to Abbey Road.
Okay.
Now here's the cool thing about Abbey Road: they have a live video camera.
Yes.
So anyone online can watch you, and we did that with our niece. We called her in Atlanta.
Okay.
And woke her up, of course.
Said, hey, we're going to walk across.
And she watched us online while we were talking to her on the phone. Very, very cool.
All right, we'll have to do that.
And then you're going to a lot of the places we went to.
Yes.
Stonehenge.
Yes.
And we took a tour bus to Stonehenge and Windsor, and actually got caught in traffic going to Stonehenge, and our driver knew how to get around it all, and that's where we went through the countryside.
Oh, nice.
To get around the main highway.
Good.
And we got there.
Well, that's the other thing about going with a tour.
Right.
These people know the country. They know the back roads. They know which way to go. Where if it was just me, one, I'm driving on the wrong side of the road, so I'm discombobulated. Then I'm in traffic. Then I'm going to have to just find a pub and sit there and just drink pints.
And there's a lot of those around.
I can't wait.
And you are going to love the Cotswolds.
Really?
Oh my! For there, I had to go there because Bridget loves that countryside,
okay.
The thatched roofs of the home.
Does it look like the hobbits should live there?
Yes,
that's what I'm picturing in my head.
Stream flowing through the middle of the village. It's like you could ride your bicycle from the farmhouse to the pub in the village. And spend the whole day there. That's the kind of villages that are there. And that one, we actually contacted a local who gave private tours. And
really?
he lived there. He was born and raised in the Cotswolds. And we had the most delightful time. We saw some sites, actually World War II sites, of towers that actually predated World War II because they would send lights up to signal from tower to tower in the olden days when invading armies would come across the land. And this tower had been converted. It's a little gift shop. Someone lives there. And there's plaques there about World War II and planes that had crashed there and stuff. It's
That'd just be a
beautiful historic area.
I think we're there for a day. Or
you're going to love it. Cotswolds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I'm looking. A full-day sightseeing tour of the Cotswolds.
Just beautiful. We actually walked between villages. There are trails, and they are called kissing gates.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Because
now we're getting into it.
Now
you want to come, don't you,
Cody?
Yeah,
see?
Want to take a walk down a path?
Yeah.
Stop at a gate.
Kissing
gate. Gaze into each other's eyes, punch each other in the throat. That's how it goes. We just started, all of a sudden we're like, no, boom, we got to move, got to get out of here. Well, this is very exciting, yeah. So I will get more information from you. I know I'm going to have about 118 scones. They do have coffee there, right? Not just
yes,
tea.
They do.
All right.
Yes, they do.
I will have tea, especially when I'm on the Thames, where I'm, you know.
And you'll have to have some fish and chips.
Of course.
At a nice pub.
Oh, I can't wait. I mean, I told Debbie, this is so jive, but I said one of the free times we're in London, I got to go to Harrods just to go in, just to see it. And there'll be a lot to see. There'll be a lot to do. It's going to be fun. Again, if you want to go, 847-606-6065. That's Steve Bertrand's number at stevebertrandtravel.com. So we will go to England. All right, on the other side of the news, our old friend Michael McDermott is going to be in the studio. He has a brand new album coming out. People are saying this is the album that everyone knew Michael could make. This is the one. His last album was a huge success. We'll see what this one holds, and we'll talk about some big shows, and Michael always has some great stories, so we'll talk to Michael on the other side of the news. It's WGN. He is a wonderful singer-songwriter, the pride of the South Suburbs. We'll throw that in.
Yeah, sure.
Sure, why not? Tinley Park loves you. Michael McDermott is here, and it's good to see you, first of all.
You
thanks
too.
For coming in.
My pleasure.
From what I'm reading, this new album, Out From Under, is, everybody say, this is the one. Now, Willow Springs, your last album, got huge critical and audience acclaim. Everybody loved it. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're saying, that's nothing compared to this one.
Yeah, well, you know, they say that thing. You know, like,
is that hard when there's so much hype?
A little bit.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's done. You can't change it now.
Yeah, but, you know, so I'm just always working. So I mean, a lot of this stuff was already, you know, in the works.
Yeah.
While Willow Springs was kind of happening. So a lot of it's unaffected.
Okay.
And then the stuff that was affected, I didn't put on it. Yeah.
Ah. All right. So how does something become effective?
Well, when you try to do something, when you sit down with intent, and then that becomes it's not authentic, that stuff you can kind of tell.
So when you're trying to manufacture, like, this is going to be a hit, I'm going to write a hit today.
Right. Yeah, I gave up doing that a long time. it's on your mind sometimes. Like, this might get on the radio.
Well, I mean, obviously you're writing because you have to write because it's your true feelings, all of that. But yeah, I mean, in the back of your mind, you do want to be commercially successful too.
Yeah, and because now I was back on people's radars,
right,
which I wasn't. Willow Springs was a surprise to me as much as it was to anybody. You know,
really?
Yeah, because you know I'd been kind of off the grid for a while, and so people were kind of saying he's back. You know, like, wow, right, this is a breakout record. You know, that
even
kind
though
of,
you'd never left.
No, I was always there. Like, yeah, like,
time.
Yeah, so it's kind of that, you know, best new artist, like, that has been around for 20 years.
Right. Well, it's, you know, that Willow Springs did launch about, you made the charts. You made the, what was it, the England-U.S. charts.
Yeah.
You were number one.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal.
Amazing.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
and you've been touring all over, not only the country, but you've been touring all over the world.
Yeah.
Which was always a thing. Even when you were, quote-unquote, gone and off people's radar, you were still touring overseas.
I was,
all the time.
Yeah. Just trying to build something over there. And, you know, it's funny. I get a lot of people, and I won't use names, but saying, hey, man.
Give it one name.
No.
No? Not even one? Just one name?
No, because, I'm already not friends with them, so if I were to say that.
How about initials?
One guy in particular that made me think of it, I don't even know his name, but I know what band he's in. But, you know, people wanting to do what I see things are going great for you in Europe. Can you hook me up?
Oh.
Like, hook you up.
I don't even like you.
Yeah, like, I don't, who are you again? You know, and then, you know, so it's just funny. I've been out there grinding it out over there for no money and 16 flights in 19 days and barely making any money. Now you just want me to hand over the keys to the kingdom?
Yeah, really.
I've been storming this castle for, you know, 10 years.
Right. People poured hot oil on me over the wall. No, you don't get to, you don't get to climb over my corpse to get inside.
I'm not
going
to open the door. Come on in, everybody. No. I don't mean to be a monger about it, but geez, like, no.
Well, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, man, I put in the work.
Yeah.
You got to put in the work, too. And there's a difference. If a friend asks for a little help, that's one thing.
Absolutely.
If somebody who's been an ass to you for years.
Yeah, or somebody I don't even know some of these people writing me, like, you know, like, hey, and back to that one guy again, but, like, you know, just, like, talking about all the things he's accomplished and, like, you know, all my dreams have come true except Europe. Can you make that happen for me? No.
No. If you made your other dreams come true, you'll probably
do this.
Make this
Keep
one
going.
Too.
Yeah. You're strong, little root.
Yeah, don't just give up on your final dream if you only have one left.
Right. Imagine the checklist you have. You have one little box unchecked.
And sometimes it's all right to have one unchecked box.
Right.
What will you do if you check that box?
Then it's over.
Right.
So
then you're completely done.
Yeah. So anyway, I feel bad that I feel this way, but I do.
No, you should feel that way. I will validate your feelings on that. Not that it matters, but I will validate it. So every time, every album seems to have certain themes to it.
Yes.
You know, Willow Springs had the themes. There was the powerful song about your losing your dad and the shadow in the window. Mm-hmm. And so how does that, what's the evolution now into Out From Under?
Well, I was thinking about that because I'm going into the cycle of being asked that. So I was thinking about this last night.
And I got the official question.
You did. You're the first one.
Yes, that's it.
So, but a lot of it's about resistance, I think, and resistance to a lot of different things. Because, I mean, there was a moment in 2016. In the span of 3 or 4 days, that two huge things happened. And one was the Cubs won the World Series, and then was it 3 days later that Trump won the election?
Yes.
And so those were very, conflicting emotions, and I watched it in the same room, one moment and just pure joy, and then, a few days later, just total disbelief. So I think there's a lot of resistant themes, just about fighting and fighting really like for your life. And so I think that's kind of what it is. I didn't, again, sit down to orchestrate it that way, but I just think that's kind of the reoccurring theme.
Well, we've got some stories of you fighting for your life. We also have a whole list of topics that you put on Facebook that we'll get to. But first, I want to hear some music.
Okay,
because
so
that's what people are. That's what people are here for. They want to hear Michael McDermott sing.
All right, so this is a song called Gotta Go to Work. Yeah, I gotta go to work, gotta go to work today. Hey, hey. Yeah, I gotta go to work, gotta go to work today. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, if I had my druthers right here in bed, I'd lay. I wish I could find myself a girl in town. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I could find myself a girl in town. I wish I could find a girl as pretty as a pearl, pick you up every time you're down. I wish I could find myself a girl in town. Yeah, I'm gonna tell the boss that he can go and kiss my ass. Kiss my ass. Yeah, I'm gonna tell the man just as soon as I can. Tilt my head back and let out a laugh. Yeah, I'm gonna tell the boss that he can go and kiss my ass. Yeah, I don't know how much more of this I can take. I find it hard to believe that this would be my fate. Yeah, I gotta go to work to get a car I can afford. Yeah, I live like Caligula on Saturday night and Sunday forgiven by the Lord. Yeah, I gotta go to work to get a car I can afford. Come Friday night, I'll be as loaded as a loaded can be. Can be. Yeah, I think I'm gonna slip something in my boss's coffee today. Hey, hey. Yeah, I think I'm gonna slip something in my boss's coffee today. It gets a little tricky when you slip someone to make it, cause you hope he's not DOA. Yeah, I think I'm gonna slip something in my boss's coffee today. Yeah, I gotta go to work, gotta go to work today. Pretty girl, probably write myself a book someday. Yeah, I gotta go to work, gotta go to work today. Yeah, I gotta go to work, gotta go to work to get paid. Yeah, I gotta go to work. Oh man, this sucks.
does. That's Michael McDermott.
Thanks.
The new album is Out From Under. The big record release shows are at City Winery on Friday, March 23rd at 8 o'clock. Sunday, March 25th, also at 8 o'clock. You can go to citywinery.com, get the tickets. You can go to michael-mcdermott.com to get all Michael's information, and to get you can get tickets there, too. You can pre-order the new album.
Yes.
A lot of stuff going on. We'll talk about all of that, and we'll get to your list of topics. I know you have many stories that you want to tell. More with Michael on the other side at 720 WGN. Two big record release shows coming up at City Winery, Friday, March 23rd at 8, Sunday, March 25th at 8 o'clock. Good seats still available. Some seats for Friday, a lot of great seats available for the Sunday show. So if you're looking for a great time Sunday, March 25th at 8 o'clock, go to the record release show for Out From Under, Michael McDermott's, as I said, new album. Very exciting. You like the City Winery. You're there. That's your place in town, isn't it?
It is my place.
Is there? What about that room? Because I've been to that room. It's a great venue to see music. What for an artist, what makes that room so special?
I think that it fits what I do well. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I mean, it's different than a rock club because there's just seating.
Yeah.
You know, so yes. And, you know, back in the day, you wouldn't even consider, just do a show and you don't care if people have to stand for two opening bands and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's nice for the seating. And it's great food, and it's a little bit of class, which is a little weird for me. But
yeah.
I think, you know, now that I've grown older, I think the class thing suits it a little bit. This venue wouldn't have been good for me 12 years ago.
All right. Well, since you brought that up, let's go back, because as I'm reading about the advance reviews for the new album,
right.
Out From Under, people are saying, listen, Michael's had a rough life, and you've documented it well, not mm-hmm. only in, you know, interviews and stuff, but in your songs.
Yes.
People, you know, drugs, drinking, jail, mm-hmm. all that. Your life changed a while ago, and, mm-hmm. you know, people know you got married, now you're a father. Things change. Did all of that, we know it changed your music, did it also change how you look at, you know, venues and things like that? It changed
everything. Yeah, obviously getting married and having a child, that was a game changer, but it took my head and heart a little bit to catch up to changing myself, you know,
because
I was still kind of reckless.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I caught up to them, then everything changed. And, you know, recovery has been a slow, it's a day-to-day process.
Right.
You know, it's a cliche, but it's true. And being involved in that has certainly changed, you know, when you go and you sit with other people, you know, because my trouble is I would isolate myself and isolate myself from my family, and I still do at times to a great fault. And so, trying to be engaged with other people, because
yeah.
we're all in this together, and it's
right.
true. And I said it flippantly, but I didn't really know what those words meant, I think. And so going to sit with people that have the same disease as you and hearing their stories and the commonality of it all, it's a beautiful thing. You know?
Is it frightening when you're starting to make that move and
yes.
you're coming to more clarity and, you know, things that you might have written when you were under the influence of whatever, now you're not and your true emotions are right there. Is it harder to write songs when you're really ripped open and honest now?
Yes, that's a great question. I was worried about that, and people would even say as a joke, like, what's he going to write about now?
Yeah.
You know. And I remember John Hiatt, and I love John Hiatt, and he's a lovely
yeah.
man too, but when he did get sober, like, I remember there was a line that he wrote in a song of his, like, the only bars I go to now have lettuce and tomatoes, and I thought, oh, man.
You want to write salad bar,
yeah, like,
odes
no,
to salad
no,
bar.
No, that's just wrong, you know. And it was a concern of mine, but I had no choice in getting sober,
right.
So I did it. And then, but I kind of find it hard to listen to some of the stuff I used to write.
Really?
Yeah.
In what respect?
I think it's fraudulent, some of it, because I think I was a fraud on some level. You know?
Trying to put forward a bravado that maybe wasn't really
absolutely.
There?
Absolutely, I was just a frightened, broken man.
But isn't that most performers, I mean,
sure.
There's a certain facade that you have to put forward because, you know, one, you're afraid that people aren't going to want to hear the real you, and two, there's a certain, especially as a rocker,
right.
There's an image you have to uphold.
So when I see videos or whatever of that avatar, I go, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I didn't see it, and I know which pictures I was f***ing in. Oops, sorry.
This one. We all missed it.
Just,
oh, boy.
Sorry.
Oh, did you get it? I don't even know where the dump button is.
My bad.
Sorry, we'll write a check.
Moving right along.
Well, Tony hit it once. We'll be fine. Like, wait a minute. Did I? Yes, I did. That's all right. Go ahead.
Okay, so, yeah, I lost my train of thought. So.
So you see the old you, and yes. It's kind of disconcerting.
Yes. Yeah, he's a troubled guy, you know, yeah. And I feel bad for him. Huh?
Is it hard then to perform those songs? Because people come, and they of course want to hear the new album, they want to hear the recent stuff, but they still want to hear some of the old stuff.
No, it's fun. It's not even challenging, because it's a bit like being an actor. It's almost singing somebody else's words, which is fun.
Really? Yeah.
And it's a different interpretive thing for me, so it's a different experience. It's great. It's like looking through an old scrapbook of photos that you're embarrassed by your haircut kind of thing.
Very nice. Can we hear one more before we go to break? And then I've got to get into the Cuban Mafia with you. There's a lot to talk about. Michael McDermott's here. This one from the new album.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
There's an old man at the counter, and he couldn't feed himself. No one seemed to make a move to offer any help. The waitress didn't notice. She went about her day. At the bus stop, a bearded man did lay. No one got too close to check if he was okay. He had a tattoo of Semper Fi, and God bless the USA. This world will break your heart. This world will break your heart. Till July, the nurse gave back his clothes as she began to cry. And she told the social worker, I got nowhere else to stay. And this world will break your heart. And this world will break your heart. And this world will break your heart. Well, this castle's made of sand, and someday we're gonna wash away. And Romeo, he stumbled in with an unlit cigarette. He said he just got off the phone with Mr. Capulet, who warned, boy, best be careful, or there will be hell to pay. Getting older, yeah, this much is true. But each day is a gift that I get to spend with you. Babe, I'll always love you beyond my dying day. And this world will break your heart. And this world will break your heart. World will break your heart in a thousand different ways.
Michael McDermott. That's from Out From Under, his new album, Out From Under. The record release shows at the City Winery Friday, March 23rd at 8 o'clock, and Sunday, March 25th at 8 o'clock. You can go to michael-mcdermott.com or citywinery.com to get your tickets. More with Michael. We will find out how on earth he had dinner with Britney Spears and so much more when we come back after the news. It is 720 WGN. Man, oh man, you let Roger in. He's yapping to everybody, talking everybody's ear off. He's got things to do because the Blackhawks come on at 6 o'clock, so you don't even have a 6 o'clock newscast, do you? You don't have, you got nothing to do. You're just hanging around. Idle hands, Roger. Idle hands. What can I tell you? Michael McDermott is in the studio with me. He, his hands are never idle. I don't know what he's doing, but with one of them, at least, he's writing songs. The other one, God only knows. But his new album is Out From Under, and he's got big record release shows coming up Friday and Sunday. Friday, March 23rd at 8 o'clock at City Winery, and then Sunday, March 25th, 8 o'clock, also at the City Winery. You can get tickets. Great seats left for Sunday. Only a couple seats. If you want to go Friday, only a couple seats left, but you can sit right up close on Sunday. There's a lot of great tickets. Michael-McDermott.com. You can get your tickets there or at citywinery.com. Very nice. Now, this, when Roger was bending your ear, but I learned something interesting. The last song you played, World Will Break Your Heart, yes, which was, as I told you off the air, a gut punch. It's a beautiful song. I mean that in the best possible way, but it really, it's like, because everybody, when you write a song, obviously it's your emotions and your feelings, but then you play it, and every person in this room, every person who hears that song, interprets it in their own way, and the world has broken everybody's heart,
sure,
and so they're feeling it. It's it was wonderful, but the album Out From Under was done.
Yeah,
and so you write this song, you're all done. You said, "Hey, this is great. I got a new album. It's all set. It's mastered. Everything's put away." And then suddenly, how'd the song come to you, and how did you then say, "I'm changing everything"?
So you think sometimes you think you have a song, and then you flesh it out, and it's not what. At all what you thought it'd be. And so, not to sound like an incredible snowflake, but I meditate. And I was meditating, and I'd always had this idea of the world would break your heart in a thousand different ways. And so some of these things, I kind of, these scenes I had are true in things I've seen. And I think just the Romeo one was the only fabricated one. But yes, yeah, so I was meditating, and then all of a sudden it was just like in some weird thing, and I thought, oh my God, I gotta go grab a guitar, and I did, and just see if it came out the way it was in my head. Cause, you know, sometimes you dream a joke or whatever.
Right, right.
And it's just like never quite the thing.
Yeah.
So I did it, and then it just started coming. I didn't grab a guitar, I just went straight to type it out, and it all fell into place, and then I grabbed the guitar, and then that fell into place, and it was over really quick.
Wow.
It was 15 minutes, and then I just knew, I thought, man, you know, cause you know a song's good.
Right.
When it's good. And so I thought, this, we gotta, so anyway, I Lex, the guy I kind of work with on my records, I text him. I said, "You're going to kill me. It's not over yet."
Oh,
you
no.
Know? And, yeah. And he was like, "Oh, no, like what?" And I said, "No, I got this song, you know, and I think it's special." And so I just did a quick version of it and sent it to him, and he went, "Yep."
He goes, so how then do you decide? Because the songs you had put on this album, you had felt strongly about it.
The record was done. Yeah.
Yeah. So now you've got, for a bad analogy, but an analogy nonetheless, you've given birth to these songs, so they're kind of your children.
Yeah.
Now you've got to axe to a couple of your kids to make room for this new kid who's now your favorite kid, and the other kids go to the...
Yeah, so what I did, how I let myself off the hook, then an idea was born that I will, in a year from now, put out a record of the outtakes from Willow Springs and the outtakes of Out From Under, and put out an outtakes album. So the songs I had to cut, like, won't just die, because usually they just never... you say, I'll get back to these.
Yeah.
They just never,
but these were done, so it's not even like they were half done that you had to say, well, I'll go back, I gotta fix something.
Right.
These were
just done,
ready to go.
Yeah.
All right, how'd you end up with Britney Spears?
Have a dinner.
So enough of this artistic mumbo jumbo. Let's get down to brass tacks. was her head shaved or not when you ate
dinner? No, she was much younger.
Okay.
And, so I was in New York and I was recording, I can't remember where, somewhere in lower Manhattan. And so the guy was in my band, he was I don't know how he was involved with Britney, but on some level, like producing or playing guitar. So she wasn't Britney Spears, so to speak.
Okay.
So it was like this girl that they're working with, but she's going to be huge. And I was just told not to hit on her.
Well, yeah, because what was she, 14?
Well, yeah, something.
Yeah.
And,
don't hit her. So you have to be told. I like that you have to be handled in that
right.
way. Listen, well, Michael, there's a young child coming. Don't hit on her.
I was a tornado at that point. And I was boozing, you know, hitting it hard. And so we went, and we all sat down. And she was just a kid. You know,
yeah.
I saw her. I was like, oh, my God, you guys. You know?
You're a real kid.
And she was like a real kid. And she had a chaperone. And so we had dinner. It was nice. And I'm sure I probably talked too much. And, you know, probably doing coke in the bathroom. And that was the night, you know.
So how did, that's what, because we talked about earlier about, you know, sitting down going, I'm going to write a hit today. Well, somebody was sitting down for, artists like early Britney, and they're writing these hits.
Yeah.
So when you're talking to somebody like that, and granted, it was a long time ago and you were a different person back then.
Yeah.
Do you think, what's going on here?
I don't get any hint of jealousy because it's just not what
I do. Jealousy, but just looking at somebody going, aren't you writing your own stuff, or you don't play your own? It's a weird.
Yeah,
the music business is a weird place anyway.
Yeah,
but that's even more. And
some of those hit songs are good. Like, you know who I don't get? I don't get Pitbull. I don't get that guy at all. All he does, literally, his show is just go out and do this.
Yeah, and yell.
Just like, come on,
and yell out area codes.
Yeah,
we all know our area code.
I mean, it's just amazing to me.
He's Mr. What, 311 or Mr. 920? I don't know what he is. He's Mr. Something.
920 is Green Bay.
Is that Green Bay? Well, maybe he's Mr. Green Bay.
Pitbull's from Green Bay?
Yes. A little known fact.
Let's start spreading that.
That's
fake news. Pitbull's really. He's Earl, and he's from Green Bay.
He used to work at the Fox Valley Mall. It was horrifying. And now he's down in Miami. He reinvented himself, much like a lot of people do. All right, so one more off your list, and then we'll get back to Out From Under, which is Michael McDermott's new album. If you want to hear the entire thing, he's having record release shows. So obviously at these record release shows, you go and you do the whole album, right?
Yeah, I think so. We're rehearsing this week, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, ideally, I'd like to do the record. It's only 45 minutes, so it's not bad.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And then what do you do for the rest of the time? Just sit there?
Yeah.
People stare at you? Are you going to sing some more?
I
told you I was going to. Yeah.
Just
Cody, I will thank you for that, because now at least Cody is actively listening to the program. 99% of the time, he doesn't even know. He's like playing solitaire. He's doing that HQ trivia game on Twitter. He doesn't care. Now he's like, holy God, I got to listen to this program. I don't know what's happening out there. What have we unleashed?
It's
in the studio.
It's not till 8. I only played during the old show.
All right, very nice. All right, let's hear another one.
Okay. I'm going to do Knockdown. I'll do this other one here. This is this was kind of inspired. Like I was living on the street in Los Angeles for a few days, and I had nowhere to go.
What time period was this?
Like 98. 99? Okay. No, I'm sorry, 2003 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was bad. So I'd stay in these bushes, and then at night, there would always be like these little things scurrying around. I never knew what they were, but I thought they were rats, but it was very scary. And then the last verse is about one of the things on Facebook was I hooked up with a cab driver in Boulder, and we drove around, and we were freebasing, and we just kept picking up people. Something to do, and then we make stops, and it was like two straight days of doing it out of our minds.
Well, and see, and that's so much for the overnight sensation. Robbie was the cab driver in Boulder.
Yeah.
How did you get from L.A. sleeping in a bush to Boulder? Where would you hitchhike? Did you wander?
Different period of time.
I was like, wow, you jumped all over. This is as crazy as I thought your life was. Now it's going exponentially higher. This guy somehow teleported from a bush with rats in Los Angeles to freebasing with a cab driver in Boulder. I don't understand how it works, but that's what the song's about, so I'll figure it out now.
It's always been like this, man. Nothing changed since the day I was born. I always felt a little strange. I was dead, and I was you. Sometimes I get a little lonely, baby. How about you? I was too. I was dead. Better be careful when you're messing with the kid. It ain't no big thing, it's all the same to me. Sometimes a little legal light is all you need. In these hard times, you gotta take a few. I ain't no glass jaw joker, baby, that is true. And you can see the stars better from the underground. I know a thing or two about being knocked down. I said I know a thing or two about being knocked down.
street. I had a home in the bushes with the rats at my feet. I've been so strung out in dirty hotel rooms. Had girls on the pipe all afternoon. I've been ridden like a horse all night and day. Been turned out and burned out and let it stay. But that's the way it is. I'm telling you straight. I got a pocket full of rocket and I'm looking for a hearted. I'm a skid row savior. It's back for a crown. I know a thing or two about being knocked down. I know a thing or two about being knocked down. Hey, I know a thing or two about being knocked down. I got this old guitar and an Irish hat. Spent 20 years, baby, with a monkey on my back, and that was hard time. And even harder still, if the left one don't get you, then the right one will. I've been hustled and muscled and left for dead. Had my face to a wall and a gun in my head. I've been cheated, defeated, and played for a fool. Everything I ever needed always came from you. I think it's time we order another round. I know a thing or two about being knocked down. Hey, I know a thing or two about being knocked down. Two days of riding shotgun in a yellow cab. Started talking to a priest right outside a meth lab. I did not say what I was trying to do. I said, hell is arbitrary. It's a point of view. I think he got it. I think he understood. I'm pretty sure he knew that I was up to no good. And then I gave him a hug and went right in. Sometimes you find heaven in a place of sin. Hallelujah. Boy, it's never enough. That which doesn't kill you, man, it makes you tough. Well, I'm the toughest thing going, baby, pound for pound. I know a thing or two about being knocked down. Hey, I know a thing or two about being knocked down. Hey, I know a thing or two about being knocked down. I could hear the voices calling from the corner, man, telling me to stay down, that'd be a bitchy. And I thought, fuck that, I know who's calling this back. Decide when there's still time to make it right. Cause it's your life and you get only one. So you better be aware of what you let it become. And I'm telling you straight, telling you truth. Do you choose your life or do you let it choose you? I say I know a thing or two. Hey, I know a thing or two about being knocked down. I said I know a thing or two about being knocked down.
Very nice. More with Michael McDermott. In just a moment, the new album out from Under. The record release shows Friday, March 23rd at 8 and Sunday, March 25th, 8 o'clock, City Winery. Go to citywinery.com or michael-mcdermott.com. We'll finish things up with Michael after this, WGN. Final few minutes with Michael McDermott here on 720 WGN. So many stories always when Michael is here. We would have to do an entire show just to get through a portion of them. We didn't even get to talk about you sitting with Robert De Niro and Sean Penn in a restaurant. We didn't talk about why you were iced by Gabriel Byrne. We never even touched on the Cuban Mafia.
No.
So, Lyle, we'll have to, again, you mentioned a book, write the book.
Yeah.
Or write more songs like the last one. The new album, Out From Under, officially released on April 27th, but you can pre-order now at michael-mcdermott.com. And if you want to hear it performed live, you need to get to City Winery next weekend, Friday at 8 o'clock, Sunday at 8 o'clock. Still some tickets left for Friday. You can get some tickets for Sunday, but go and get your tickets because if you've enjoyed what you've heard here, this is just a sampling of what's to come on an album that everybody, again, if you... Now you're back.
Yeah.
Now you're the golden child.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it only took you how long to get here?
About 27 years.
How many cab rides with Robbie in Boulder?
Oh, that was too many.
Too many cab rides. So a lot of things that have gotten you to this point and made you the guy you are. And you mentioned looking back at the old guy. Would you change anything?
No. No, I would have gotten sober sooner.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that would have been it. Well, because you look and, I mean, you need all those, the experiences make you who you are, and thank God you survived all of those. Because listening to the last song, you're enumerating all these things that happened to you. I'm like, I'd have been dead like a quarter way through this song. There's absolutely no way I survived.
Dead by the chorus.
I don't even make the bridge. I'm finished. This is unbelievable. Can we get something on the way out?
Yeah, I'm going to do an older song. It's a different version. It kind of goes with the first one. But thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
It is always a pleasure. Don't forget, go see Michael McDermott at City Winery Friday and Sunday.
I know how to turn water to wine. I'm filthy rich, but I haven't died.
tragedy, loss and defeat. Choke your bitterness till your blood turns sweet. So hallelujah, I'm overjoyed. I'm drunk again and I'm unemployed. Drunk again and I'm unemployed. I'm drunk again and I'm unemployed. Singing la hey, singing la hey, hey, hey. Mama tells me it's gonna be okay. People always ask me what it is that I do. Do I tell them the truth? Caught in a pilot, a thief for a cut. Oh, I'm just about to publish my very first book. Sometimes I'm a hunter, sometimes I'm a clown. Sometimes I'm at a door who's just moved to town. So hallelujah, joy. I'm drunk again and I'm unemployed.
Michael McDermott. See him this weekend at City Winery. Michael-McDermott.com. Blackhawks hockey coming up in just a minute on WGN.